TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 122, and I'm Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Hi, I'm Tom from Glendale.
This is Susie from Sherman Oaks.
And Allison from Tarzana.
Wow, you guys did that without coordination. Congratulations.
We're slow, but we learn.
I also have to announce this week before we get into the news that TV Campfire will be going on hiatus for 2 weeks.
We're taking a break. We're just not that into you.
We're taking a break because I'm, well, going on vacation.
Without the rest of us, I believe.
Yes, pretty much. And I can't.
And you're sloughing off on your duties.
I cannot logistically figure out how I could podcast from where I'm going.
Won't regret it for a minute.
No, not really. So we'll get the. And it also conveniently works for in the summer when we don't have. Well, I was going to say we don't have that many shows, but then I'm looking at my show list. We have a lot of shows. So. But I'm not missing out on the actual prime time of television.
Right.
So there's that. Yeah. Considering that I podcast from everywhere I go, this is the first time we've ever not done a podcast for 2 weeks since we started. So I'm patting myself on the back if you guys aren't. Thank you. All right. So we're not going to be back until the middle of August. Mm. Ugh.
Okay.
That seems like such a
but
long time.
In the meantime,
time.
You can listen to one of our best of podcasts.
That's funny. All right. So first up, let's talk about the news. And this week we actually have a lot of news. Some of it I tweeted. If you guys are following my Twitter feed, some of it I will tell you now, which is The Killing Season 2 has been canceled by AMC, and anyone who is surprised, raise your hands. I can see you out there.
I think I read that in Dumb
Magazine.
I can hear
the cricket noises.
Right. Yeah, I just don't care about The Killing, and I don't think anybody else did either.
Nope.
The other big thing is Modern Family contract negotiations. Basically, everyone walked out. Well, they didn't walk out of the table read. They just didn't show up to the table read. Mm. And they sued ABC over...
And Fox.
Oh, it was like a 7-year contract, but the contract went from 2009 to 2016. And it was... That's not 7 years. And it's just this whole thing. And they insisted on, you know, more pay. And I have to say, I was with them up until I saw the contract that they rejected. And I was like, are you kidding me? That's a good contract.
Here's the problem, though. When ABC and Fox Studios are saying how much money they're making on the show at the expense of the actors, that's when the actors are like, seriously, you're gonna brag about...
And then I think part of it also is every single one of them got an Emmy nom. So I think they're kind of like...
Show us the love.
Yeah.
By love, we want more money.
Yes. And I get it, but I did feel like they were being a little bit greedy.
Yeah,
like, the first one they came out with, they went from... Because they were right now they were making $65,000 per episode. Mm-hmm. And they went from that, so they said more money. I was like, okay, fine. And the network went up to $150,000.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's double your salary. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
And they were like, nope.
Trust me, Ed O'Neill is making more than this.
No, he wasn't. They published. They were making $65,000. He was making $105,000. So
that's a huge amount.
That's not. I mean, he was making more than that.
But he was still in solidarity with the other five.
Right.
Yeah.
But he was. But then they went to $150,000, which is more than what Ed O'Neill was making. So he's kind of. He's kind of like what?
But it's. I think it's going to be that, you know, Six Musketeers all for one.
Well, and he actually ended up joining their lawsuit.
Yes,
he ended up doing that.
That's
so,
the thing.
So all of them are now should be all making pretty much the state. They're going to all make the same, but I don't know what they actually finally negotiated.
Were they looking at like 200 or something?
They were. It was supposed to be 200
to something. Yeah.
It might be 200 now because I think what the studio offered was $150,000 this year and then $200,000 next year and then $250,000 the year after that and then $300,000 the year after that. They turned that one down. That's why I was just kind of like, really?
At least they had a good escalator clause, but yeah. I don't know. It's just, ever since the Friends brouhaha, right. Because their contract wasn't actually up for negotiation legally, like maybe two or three times during the 10 years of the show.
Right.
But the problem is, when the studio and the network start, when the studio especially starts bragging about how much money they're making, and the talent feels, well, that's money you're making off of me, and you're not paying me my right. fair quote. So
stuff got out of control. Anyway,
I'm not feeling well. But another six figures will make me feel a whole lot better.
Cure me right up.
All right. So the next piece of news is the Fringe. Opposite of that, they have been having some bad luck behind the scenes, and production got shut down for a couple of weeks. And basically, Blair Brown got sick. Mm-hmm. Then John Noble got sick. They said he has some sort of sleeping disorder, yeah. Which I don't know what that means. It's like, is that Hollywood code for something?
It's weird, yeah.
But they said that he's out of it. And then Jessica, who plays Astrid, She got into a car accident. And I was just like, are you kidding me? So, but
sounds
they
like the plot of an episode.
I know. It was like, let's knock off all of them at once.
Joshua Jackson, we're coming for you.
He's like, oh, agent, can we talk about my insurance policy?
Like, what the heck? But Jessica's fine, in case anybody's wondering. She's supposed to be.
Yeah, she is.
They said that she was shaken up, but other than that, she's fine. But they're not supposed to go back into shooting until August 7th. But they claim that's not going to delay the premiere, but I don't know. Like, that might.
I mean, it's Fox, so they might as well wait till after the World Series at this point.
Don't say that!
Do you really want to get two episodes and then be off for playoffs and World Series?
That's true.
That's what kills a lot of their shows to begin with.
It is.
All right, fine. That's a very convincing argument. I just know that I just want the final 13 to be shot. Like, can we just get back in the studios and finish this thing? That's all I'm asking. All right, and the last thing is the TCA Awards. Not the Teen Choice, but the Television Critics Awards. And the big news on that is that Claire Danes for Homeland was given the Individual Achievement in Drama Award. They don't break it up to male or female. They just give one award to one actor. Done.
Which is kind of cool.
It is kind of cool because they don't distinguish. I like that.
Yeah.
But she was good. I got nothing. Individual achievement in comedy was Louis C.K. For Louis, and I've watched most of first season. I've watched like four episodes of first season. I didn't like it, but I heard that second season's really good. That first season's okay, and second season, I was like, I don't know, man. I really didn't like first season. Outstanding Achievement in Youth Program is Switched at Birth. I find that interesting because that show's actually pretty good. It's a pretty good show. So it's just a random show that I watched first season of and just forgot about it when second season came. It wasn't deliberate, but I realized part of it was I was always watching it on Hulu. So I didn't have my TiVo set to record it. I always just watched it. And so when it came back, I totally forgot about it. Okay. Outstanding New Program is Homeland. For Showtime, which isn't surprising since Claire Danes won the award.
Yep.
Outstanding Achievement in Movies or Miniseries was Downton Abbey, and I was like,
they beat Sherlock. That's
fair.
Sad.
Yeah.
Is this first season of Downton Abbey or
second season?
Second season wasn't as good.
Whereas
Sherlock was
better. Oh, second season of Sherlock, right.
I know. It was very strange.
Okay.
It would have even made more sense if it had been like first season, but although still not over Sherlock, but a little closer. But this was not their best season.
No.
Okay. Outstanding Achievement in Drama is Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. All right. Outstanding Achievement in Comedy is Louis. And then Program of the Year is Game of Thrones.
Woo!
Yes.
Now, I'm confused. What's the difference between Program of the Year and Outstanding Achievement in Drama?
It's just overall, I think.
It's like best.
It's like Best Picture.
Yeah.
But there are two TV shows that are basically getting Best Picture. That's why I'm confused.
No, they have a comedy, they have a drama, but they have Best Overall.
Yeah.
Okay.
Of all categories together, kind of thing.
Yeah. All right. I'll take it. Whatever. I'll take that for Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Those are those awards, and I think that is it we have for the news.
One quick thing. Warner Brothers is recutting Beware the Batman, the new animated series for their DC Nation block on Cartoon Network because of the Aurora tragedy. And specifically, one of the things they're doing is they're going to make the guns more science fiction-y and less realistic.
Because that's going to convince children that they're not really guns.
Absolutely. That's absolutely going to be so much better than just, you know, banning assault weapons. Right. That's everything but, you know, what actually matters.
All right. Let's not delve into politics. Because that's not...
That was a gimme. Yeah. Come on.
I know. Well, I let you have it, but I'm just saying, let's move on to other things. Let's talk about the shows. First up, we're going to talk about Breaking Bad. Ooh. And my TiVo must hate me because I saw Breaking Bad recording. I was like, oh, it's recording Breaking Bad for me. And then I went to do something else. And then I came back to my TiVo and there was no Breaking Bad. And I was like, what? What just happened? So I was a day late watching it than everybody else. But I did still watch it.
Okay. Yeah.
So what'd you guys think?
This season
it's getting kind of interesting.
It's not going to end well for some people.
Well, we knew that because we talked about it last.
Yeah, but still.
But what I really liked about this one is because again, I'm all in it for Jesse, and we talked about it too. We're like, we really need to have Jesse figure out
what Walt has done to him.
Yeah, like all the things that he does not know that Walt did. So I like how they really focused on that in this episode.
Because he has the big breakdown, right? And Walt, of all people, is comforting him.
Yes.
And I was just like, that's just so
it's
wrong.
It's heartless. It's so heartless that he's doing it on purpose. And it's like...
Oh, yeah, because he set it up so that he could find it, right?
Yep. Exactly.
I give Walt credit for covering all his bases.
Yeah.
Because he's like, okay, what did I forget? What detail am I thinking?
But you know something, with this show, you know the way it goes, is the symbol, the tiniest little thread will unravel everything
for him.
That's true. I'm waiting to see what that thread
will be. Because they're
putting
so much weight on these bank accounts that that Gus had set up, I just think there's something there that's gonna...
Well, it might expose them, but it's not gonna be like, oh yes, and Walt poisoned the kid.
Yeah.
Like, that's not...
No. But there's still... I mean... It seems to me what would be effective is if several things that... Because as big of a control freak as Walt is, there are unforeseen things.
That's true.
And it's not just going to be one. I just think there's going to be a lot of loose threads.
I thought that it was really cool that this episode was almost all about Mike, too.
Yes.
We got to see his world, his granddaughter, what his life is like, what his days are like.
Yeah.
And how cool he is in the face of the police.
Just how cool he is in the face of everybody.
Everything. Yeah.
Like when he comes to get that woman.
Yeah.
After she's come to him and with this crazy plan to just kill
everybody
involved.
Yeah.
And he tells her no, and then she starts it anyway.
Right. It's should have known that was coming.
Oh, but still.
It sets it up, too, for, I always forget, is it Hank?
Hank,
yeah. Where Mike is basically like, Hank has admitted, oh, you know, where did all this money for your granddaughter come from? And it was like, you could see in Mike's face right there, it's like, dude, don't you dare mess with the family. You know, so it just kind of sets up something for that later, too.
Except that he's not mad at the cop for finding the money.
No.
That's his job.
That's his job.
Exactly. But he just knows that if that was a veiled threat from Hank, it's like, don't do that to Mike.
No, but it's not. He's not threatening the granddaughter. He's just like, we're going to take the money. That's pretty much all he's saying.
We're going to seize the money.
We're going to seize the money. But he's not going to hurt his granddaughter. That's not what they're trying to say. He's just saying, all that money you set aside for your granddaughter, gone.
We're gonna take it.
Yep. That's pretty much what and that's why Mike, when he left the room, was like, oh crap. So now he realizes now he's broke. So
everything's conspiring to keep him in bed with Walt.
Of course.
That's true.
So he's basically got to keep, now he's got to keep his money under the mattress like Walt does. Walt keeps his, that hasn't worked well for Walt either.
Walt just declared he was bankrupt now.
Yeah.
He has no
Well, that's
money
because
now.
His wife spent all his money.
Of course.
The key is not to let anybody know where you keep your money.
That is
the key.
I think they've learned by now.
But because he was trying to figure out a way to launder it to make it look like he got it legitimately.
Yeah.
And letting his wife know was just a mistake. But now my theory is the wife might be the one that kills him. Because
that
scene...
She's freaking out, man.
That scene where they were in bed and he calls
him...
What?
You mean from last week?
No, this week. This week's episode when they're in bed together and he's like comforting... I'm putting in parentheses, comforting her.
Oh.
And then he just basically, he knows he's moving to having sex and she looks like she does not want him to touch her.
She doesn't, man.
And it's just so uncomfortable. And I was like, man, maybe she's the one that kills him.
I don't know if they'd go there.
Why not?
She's not guilt-free.
She's not, but I think she feels like he's a danger to the family.
Yeah.
I think that that would be what would motivate her to kill him. And we
already know she's pretty smart, too, though. She's pretty clever, so she could conceivably work something out.
I just wonder if she might help set him up somehow.
Well, that's true, too. Yeah. But, I mean, I think she'll have a part in it, yeah. Because he knows that he's scaring her, and he's using that to his advantage right now, and it's really creepy.
That is extremely creepy.
All right, so moving on.
Yeah.
Good episode. Thumbs up. Next up is Newsroom. So what do you guys think?
They had the Rudy moment.
Well, the thing that tripped me out is they have this whole thing where they talk about his favorite movie is Rudy and he cries. And I was like, that's kind of interesting, but I didn't understand why we were learning this information.
Well, you know, in a Sorkin show, if they're spending that much time telling you, it's going to pay off somehow.
Well, and then I felt like an idiot for not realizing. I was like, oh, of course it's going to pay off. But it was a really good moment because we got to spend more time with, what's the guy's name? He's not Pavel. What is his name?
Their blog guy.
I can't think of his name.
I can think of the actor's name.
Dev
Patel is
that. Thank you. That's why I said Pavel. That was Pavel. Patel. I'll file a letter. But
I'd like to buy a vowel.
He's Russian Indian mix.
Yeah, there you go.
But this is the one where he gets really invested in, they find a reporter on the street because it's the Arab Spring, so it's Egypt.
Arab Spring.
It's Egypt trying to go for its independent time, the riots in the street, and they can't send their reporter out. And when he does try to go out, he gets basically beaten.
Well, he gets bullied by his producer.
Well, he said that he would have done it on his own.
But he's still got...
There's that angst because the producer is thinking, I just almost got my guy killed.
That's true. So he got...
And he was beaten pretty badly.
Yeah, he was.
Beaten the rock, yeah.
I'm not sure how I'm supposed to feel about that producer.
I don't like him.
Because I'm surprised they have kept him around because...
He's not on our show.
He's
right.
not on our show, and yet he's the romantic obstacle to the guy we do like.
Right. But, I don't like him at all. And I don't think we're supposed to like him, but then they keep showing...
But he does have his good points.
He does.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's not... It's not black and white. I mean, you know, he does have a conscience. He felt bad about what happened. And, you know, he does do things that are good sometimes, so...
He says sometimes. Sometimes.
Sometimes.
But this one... Because they had that, plus in contrast, they had... What was going on in Wisconsin, where those people were writing about the unions.
Labor unions.
So they had both stories going on simultaneously, and I was like, did that happen at the same time? That's pretty cool. Like, I didn't remember. I remembered both events.
They crossed over each other.
But I didn't remember they happened at the same time, so I was like, oh, okay. So basically the big deal was their man on the street who showed his face disappears. And
you knew something bad was going to happen as soon as you took that off.
Yeah. And I couldn't believe that they had him reveal his face. I was like, you guys crazy? You're going to get him killed. And they're like, no, it'll be fine. I was like, in what universe is that going to be fine? But so I actually felt like because they almost got him killed, they needed to be the ones to pay to get him out of jail. You know, so that was all pretty good. And apparently, once they found out somebody with money knew him, they're like, all right, fine, we'll let him go for $500,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a really good tense episode, and people. Oh, did you notice everyone was getting injured in that episode? You have the reporter who basically
walking into the door.
People literally were getting injured. Like, okay, you had the guy with the head injury, and he had the Band-Aid on his head. Yeah, he was walking in the door. Then you had Patel, who I don't know his character's name, he hit the monitor and like broke his hand.
Broke his fingers.
And then you had the producer guy who was upset and ran his shoulder into the door, and then he was in a sling. And then they had this shot where they showed like everybody in different layers, and everybody had a sling on.
I know,
or
by
a
the
leg
end of the episode, it looked like a scene from ER.
Yeah, it was so funny.
Newsroom is a dangerous place.
Oh, and that was the other thing, is they wanted to put the guy on television who was beat up because they were like, let's show them how dangerous it is for us to do our jobs. Everybody thinks that, you know, we have really easy jobs. Let's show them that that's not true. But I was like, that's kind of irresponsible to put him on television looking like that. I was like, that's a bad idea. So all
and
that was really good. Yeah, they didn't do it, but I liked the discussion. I liked how they tried to figure out, you know, what's the right thing to do here. And then their Rudy moment at the end, because they realize
that Will paid his own personal money.
Right, and so everybody chipped in as much as they could afford, which I thought was really, that was really sweet. That was a good moment. It didn't make me cry, but it made me go, aw.
It
was an aw moment. All right. So, thumbs up, Newsroom. This is a very good episode. I was impressed, again. Next up, talk about True Blood. And the only
we're still talking about that?
The only thing that's halfway interesting about True Blood this week is...
Think about that.
No, well, it was the whole Suki storyline, actually.
Suki!
Where she finds out that she has a finite amount of fairy power, or fairy juice, or whatever.
Yep.
So at a certain point, she could use up all her power, and she gets all excited. She's like, you mean I could be normal? I was like, oh, God, please. That would be great, because then we wouldn't have to see you. But I don't think that's going to be the case. I'm sure something else is going to happen.
Yeah, something tells me.
She'll get a fairy recharge.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happened, is they gave her a recharge, and they were like, well, you have to be careful from now on, because you're on a limited amount of power, and you just can't use it all up. Mm-hmm. And so now she's like sitting in her front yard just shooting off fairy juice into the air or whatever. Just like there's like a light show now going on her porch.
Yeah.
Oh, and her brother freaking shot Jessica in the head. Like, what?
Yeah. Well,
that got out of hand.
It got way out of hand. I was like, are you kidding me? Who ends a yelling match? Because they got into an argument. It was a legitimate argument. Yeah. Because he was mad that she had some guy, because she was kissing him and she had blood on her mouth, because she had been sucking on some guy, because he didn't announce he was coming. He just showed up. Mm-hmm. She was eating, and he kisses
her. She's in the middle of dinner.
She's in the middle of dinner, right? And he kisses her. He's like, is that blood? You have blood on your mouth? Whose blood is this? And he freaks out and starts yelling at her, and they get into an argument. She's like, she apologizes at first. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. But he still gets angrier and angrier and angrier, and they start fighting, and he pulls a gun and shoots her in the head.
And Which was completely out there. I mean, the thing is, she's made it clear earlier that they are not an exclusive thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, she is free and on her own to do what she wants. And for the argument to have even escalated to that kind of point where he feels that possessive of her was stupid. And then the gun, I don't care if he knows it's not going to kill her. That was pretty outrageous.
That was uncalled. And like her brains are all over the side door. He's like, oh, you'll live. I would. Are you kidding me? Like that was just,
Well, it was weird because he had made it clear in like what last season or whenever it was or earlier this season that, yeah, he wanted it to be kind of like almost platonic if possible. He wanted them to be friends. I'm like, really?
Mm-hmm.
And so how did this argument get as passionate
thing is he found out that vampires killed his parents.
Exactly.
And so now he's mad at all vampires.
Right.
Except he wasn't really mad at her, but the argument escalated
because
and allowed
suddenly
him.
It occurred to him, oh yeah, she really is a vampire because here she is sucking some guy's blood upstairs, and I think it just completely set him off. But yeah, the whole gunshot thing just amazed me. I was with him up until then. I was like, you know, okay, I could see where that was going with this character, the frustration because of the vampire thing.
Right.
But then the whole thing with, what's his name? Lafayette. And
his
voodoo thing.
Oh,
and they
sewed his lips together.
That was nasty.
That was so hard to watch.
That was something I didn't need to see.
Because I felt like we were in the middle of a horror movie.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
I had to minimize the screen.
When did True Blood turn into Saw 14?
I don't know, but that was nasty. We're all skipping the most important thing, which was great conversation between Bill and Eric because everybody's drinking all this blood. And it was supposed to be Lilith's blood, and they were just going to just chug it.
Yeah.
And Bill was like, are you sure we should do this? And Eric's like, we're vampires, it's vampire blood. You can't do anything to us. And it's like, cut scene!
they
are so high. They are the high. I was just like, wow. And really old vampires, super high, not a good thing.
Out in public with lots of people.
Oh, the best thing ever was Eric giving Bill a piggyback ride. I swear to God, I was like, is he on his back? Like, I don't think that was scripted. I think that was more of an impromptu, the actor just jumped on him, and then the other was like, all right, and just started walking down the street together.
And I was like, but no better sign of how high he is.
Exactly. That was awesome.
Yeah, so that was cool, though.
And then they go into a wedding, of course. I was like, of course it's a wedding. Learn from the School of Angelus. So they go into a wedding and just basically massacre everyone and just feed on the whole family. Mm-hmm. And then Lilith appears.
I was like, all the blood.
All the blood that they spilled allowed Lilith to take form. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, this all of a sudden got awesome. Right? So I like Lilith showing up. But then my problem, which is funny, I was like, my level of where my breaking reality is really bizarre. Because I'm okay with resurrecting a Lilith from however long she's been dead. Sure. I'm cool with that. But the ghost of Godric, I was like, whoa.
That's what you got.
That was my line. I was like, why does Godric have a ghost? No.
We saw Godric's ghost before.
I know.
Yeah.
I was just like,
I didn't think vampires were supposed to become ghosts or something like
that. Yeah, I don't know. I had a problem with Godric's ghost showing up.
See, I thought it was, I just looked at it as his conscience.
His conscience?
Like, finally, like that little bit that just kicked in that said, you know what, inherently, Eric just kind of knew that what they were doing was
wrong.
Yeah. So I thought it was part of like a hallucinogenic thing.
Well, that's what somebody else.
High from the Lilith blood.
Yeah.
Well, the question is, somebody also.
Yeah, I mean, if he sees Godric when he's stone cold sober, then I'd kind of worry.
Yeah.
But the question is, somebody else said because he saw Godric, does that mean that Lilith was also hallucination?
Well, remember, I thought she was because there was a one shot. That's a really good question because there was one shot where he looked up at where the other, what's her name, the woman,
the sister.
Was, the sister, whatever. She was like supposedly like basking in Lilith's glory, like right in front of her. And he looked up, and there was a shot where it was just her looking, and there was nothing there.
Well, my
so
question
that was what I thought maybe
I
it was.
I think that was after he'd seen Godric, and
exactly.
I think that there was like a certain break in,
yes,
you know, his
ability.
He wasn't under the spell so much.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know if she was strictly hallucinogenic because, you know, you can't.
Everyone,
a group of people hallucinate the same thing at the same time.
Yeah, everybody was looking at the same place.
But she wasn't like physically there. So.
No. And that's the thing. Once he broke from the rest of them, and he was able to get to a different level and not see her anymore. He was in the spell like the rest of them were.
Yeah, but wow. All those guys high, that was kind of awesome. I have to say, that was pretty good. Especially the piggyback ride. So,
and if you hate karaoke, you know, this was
a good episode. That's awesome.
That's true,
because their wedding was at a karaoke bar. I was like, who has a wedding at a karaoke bar?
Well, not necessarily the wedding, but the reception.
That's true. And then King of Mississippi, I forget. What is his name? Edgington.
Yes.
He basically breaks into, he starts singing with the woman, like, oh, come on, I'll accompany you. And he sings with her, and then, of course, he kills her, but... Oh man, that was pretty good. So I'd say those were the couple of things that were worth. Everything else was whatever.
Like the Tara thing and whatever.
Yeah.
And Hoyt is now with the guys who are into like killing the.
Yeah, but I think Hoyt is very half hearted into it. Like
he is
as half hearted. I don't think Hoyt would have shot Jessica in the head.
No,
you know,
but
like,
he may have set her up for something bad since he told them all that he's like, yeah, you know, I hate her now or whatever.
Yeah, but
like,
he's to talk. I really don't believe Hoyt is...
Oh, no, he doesn't. Yeah, I'm sure he doesn't, but he set it up for them, so I think that group is going to start going after vampires.
He's just... The thing is, I think they're taking the jilted boyfriend thing way
far.
It's like, dude, get over it.
Yeah.
A year ago.
Exactly. I know. Move on. Yeah. Exactly. All right, next up, let's talk about political animals, and this is the third episode, I think.
Second episode
of political animals. And so now you can find out what the actual theme of the season is, which is the big story is that... I was going to say Hillary Clinton.
The big story is Hillary Clinton.
I wonder
Clinton's
why that
president.
Would come to your mind.
Yes, is that she's going to run for president after this term and go against the incumbent. She's going to go against the incumbent. So that's the big thing. She tells... I think at the end of the first episode, she tells her... security guy, and they kind of laugh about her driver. Well, he wasn't. I think he was
a
secret service. So and they kind of laugh about it, and then she tells her son, and then he hates the idea to the point that he betrays his mother and tells a reporter. Mm-hmm. And I was like, dude, really? You're supposed to be the good son.
Mm-hmm. Well, but you know, he has a point, because historically that kind of thing has never worked before, and all it does is split the party and allow the other party to get in.
But I don't think
I think what he's seeing is the bigger picture, not necessarily being loyal to his mom, but making sure that the opposing party doesn't kick their guy out of the office.
If it was that noble, that I wouldn't be as angry about it, but I don't. That's not what his motivation. His motivation is he doesn't want his family
to go through the mud again.
Yeah, he doesn't want his family to be in the White House again. He doesn't want his
family. Well, I think it's a combination of the two. That's how I saw it anyway.
No, I saw it as more of a selfish thing. But it's a valid point. Like, her going for the White House is going to affect everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't ask anyone in the family before she made this decision. So I kind of get it, but still, dude, like, I might be mad at my mom, but I'm not going to, like, narc her out.
Stab her in the back.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that. So
it's interesting that the way they play him really, really, really detesting his father.
Oh, yeah. Well, because he sleeps around, the father sleeps around all the time. So, and he basically hurts the mom over and over again, and she always forgives him. And I could see him being angry at his dad for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, every time the dad's like, oh, I promise I'll be good, and then 5 seconds later, he's sleeping with somebody else.
Yeah, it's like, want to see my private section of Air Force One?
It has like
Do you really have a shower in there?
Yeah, I know. I was like, really,
How
dude?
How naive could she be?
Right, so he's pretty smarmy and detectable. Detectable?
Detestable.
Detestable, thank you. But I thought now that I see what the arc is for the season, because that's pretty much where I think we're going for the season. How many episodes is it? It says
only
limited.
Like 5 or 6.
Really?
Yeah. Very short season.
They're calling it a miniseries versus
a series.
If the ratings are good enough, they will pick up a season 2. But
and I hope they do, because I'm really interested in it. I think it's a good show.
I agree. What did you think so far? Or is anything that stood out for you?
I really like the scene that the other son, the druggy son, had with the grandmother.
The gay son.
Oh.
And you start to get an idea of, you know what? You could see where that comes from in him. Because she's just shy of an alcoholic herself.
Yeah.
But her discussion with him about what happened, you know, with her previous husband,
mm-hmm.
and his problems with drugs, too.
Right.
And the speech that she had to him was absolutely fantastic. It really was. I love the dynamic between them. And I love the honesty that she has with her grandson.
This
no nonsense kind of thing.
I wish he hadn't taken the check.
What do you mean by he hadn't taken the check?
I wished he hadn't taken the check.
Okay.
Because he totally. I mean, I like that she figures it out and calls mm-hmm. him out and says, "If you ever steal from me again, we're done."
Right.
But I mean, the thing is, and I'm surprised.
But he's a drug addict. Of course, he's going to take
the
check.
And
the
fact that she's like, I expected him to do.
You know, it's in the genes because your grandfather was like this.
Right.
But the whole thing that. I'm surprised they haven't promoted Ellen Burstyn. Won an Academy Award in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And so she's an amazing actor. It's good to see her working. I'm surprised they haven't promoted her a little bit more than they have. I mean, Sigourney's been nominated a couple of times.
So, but I mean, I think that was a good scene.
Brilliant.
I thought it was great.
I just wish they weren't being so cliched with the character, though.
Oh, that character.
That character. It's just, I mean, it really is a retread of his role from Kings.
Yeah, very similar.
And I know
he's smarter, at least, than the character he played in Kings, because the character in Kings was pretty dim-witted, and this version, I think, you know, he has issues, he has problems, he's an addict, but he's basically an intelligent person and a worthwhile human being. He just needs to overcome his problems.
Right, and his mom, and being in the limelight is not helping, basically.
No, not at all. I mean, he's in a seriously dysfunctional family and a politically dysfunctional family at that.
I thought it was surprising that they made the brothers twins, fraternal twins.
Oh, they are? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Until that scene in the car, I didn't realize that they were only supposed to be minutes apart.
Yeah, okay. I don't think I picked that up. All right. So thumbs up for Political yep. Animals. Okay. Next Definitely. Up, let's talk about Falling Skies. And what's weird is in this particular episode, I had a lot of trepidation going into it because I thought from the end of last episode they were gonna string us along with the kids think the Ben thinking that this girl was a good guy and that she was gonna lead him on and reveal his contacts and all this other stuff, and I was like, oh, this episode's gonna suck, and they deal with that in like the first 5 seconds. Like he gives her some information and immediately it's revealed who she is, and I was like, yeah. Oh, okay. And it actually goes to show you that the writing this season is so much better, because the other, if this had been first season, they would have strung that out.
That would have been good.
Yeah. But it still was filled with things that made you just go, what? All through it. It's like they're talking about getting away from the aliens, and it leaves me wondering how in the world they can get away from aliens that should be able to track them wherever they are. These are aliens that cross like a galaxy to get to them, and yet somehow they can't find where they're going on their own planet. And the scene, you know, I don't want to necessarily avoid all the other stuff, but skipping to the end, the bit where Ben says, well, you know, I was reading the alien's mind when he was reading mine, and I know what they're all about. And instead of sharing that with the class, he just
leaves.
They just have a little conversation about his first day at school, and then he traipses off into the forest. And it's like, what is that?
That is true. He was like, well,
I have some questions. Hello.
He did say that you need to be afraid, but he didn't tell you what the master plan was.
Yeah. I mean, afraid of what? Why? Where? When?
Well, the other thing is everything that he's told them up until this point, no one's believed him. So I kind of, Ben is like, this is what's going on. And everybody's like, you're crazy. Well, this is what's going on. You're crazy. And so finally, he's just like, you know what? I'm just going to go find kids like me and do my own resistance, which I think could be cool, because I have a feeling very soon they're going to need an army of those kids. And Ben is off doing that.
Oh, now, no doubt. I think that's going to lead to exactly that. But yeah, there was just so many moments in this thing where I was wondering what was going on. Another one that I loved was where they had the girl, the ex-girlfriend, who's one of the alien
harness kids
people now, the harness kids, and she comes in and she does this whole speech. He asks her why are you doing this, and she gives this whole speech about how, well, now I know everything in the universe, and I know all that goes on in the smallest thing and what it could possibly lead to. And I'm thinking, you don't even know that your master got shot in the other room.
That's what the kid is thinking too. He's but
I think that her arrogance is what leads to her downfall,
right?
And the Charleston thing, I hope they hurry up and don't drag that out.
Well, because
obviously there's some big, huge plot twist awaiting them in Charleston.
Of course.
And I'm kind of like, okay, let's get there already and move on.
Right. Because Charleston, whatever it is, it's not what they think it is.
No.
We all know that. And my theory is that it's the place, like, the aliens proposed a place for all the humans to come together and be like a concentration camp.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what Charleston is.
I think that's
much more likely. At least they're questioning it. You know, that's the one thing I could say is that at the end, when they all start making fun of what they expect there,
right,
there's some indication that they're not expecting it really to be as rosy and wonderful as it's been presented to them to be.
I agree. So hopefully when they get to Charleston, they send a scouting party versus the entire group.
Second regiment.
Yeah, so let's send a scouting party first and see what it's like before we commit everybody. But they are kind of betting the everything on there, because they only have enough fuel to get there. They only have enough food to get there. So, yeah. But, you know, I do think that going to Charleston will introduce a bunch of new characters, because I saw in the preview Terry O'Quinn, yet I haven't seen him yet. So I'm assuming he's going to be Charleston.
I would guess so.
Anyway, so thumbs up, Falling Skies. I think, one other thing I wanted to say is the littlest kid, Matt, actually got to be kind of a soldier this week. I like
it. Yeah, but I still...
Well, I'm also finding it funny, because I'm like, they never put bullets in the gun that they give him. He just walks around with an empty gun. But I do think it's funny that they always have him, they give him stuff to do so he feels like he's useful. And then he actually got to do something useful.
Like he got to be skitter bait.
Well, he wasn't Skinner bait. He got to be the messenger. Right.
Paul Revere for the creepy crawly skitters.
Yes. But, I mean, he got a job. He did it. He went into that crawl space without any fear. That's impressive for a little kid. So I liked it. I like that they're actually, instead of him just being cute and hanging around, he really wants to help and be a soldier.
And maybe
I didn't like that they offed their engineer.
Oh, that wasn't good.
Oh, the black dude from the killing?
Yeah, that was.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of his character, but I liked him. He was interesting, and he was easy on the eyes.
Like Jamal
And he also was extremely important to them, just purely functionally speaking, because as far as I know, he's the only qualified engineer they have in their group who could make everything run. And they just, you know, kill him off randomly, and I'm thinking, not such a good idea.
If I remember correctly, he wasn't on season one, though.
No, he was. He was in the back. Technically speaking, we're supposed to believe he was in the background in season one.
Oh, the old Lost trick.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So he was the one fixing stuff in the background.
But we're only aware of it this year.
Right. But now they've killed him, so now I don't know what they're going to do.
So I thought that was a kind of a dumb move.
Well, they did it for dramatic effect of the chick that I don't care about.
Oh, yeah, the young med student freaking out. We're all going to die.
We're all going to die. Nothing matters.
And I'm just waiting for Moon Bloodgood to bam, Bacchus.
Yeah, because
she just continues to be annoying. I mean, she's gone from going, you know, I love Jesus, kumbaya, to know the world stinks and everything's going to be awful and everyone's going to die and it stopped talking to me. She's whiny and terrible no matter what she does.
I know.
They haven't actually created a human being out of her yet.
Yeah, I don't like her at all. Anyway, moving on.
She must die.
Well, maybe she will get her wish.
Yeah, if they had killed off her instead of him, I would have had no problem.
I agree with that, actually. I agree with that assessment. All right, let's move on. We still like Falling Skies. Let's be clear about that.
Yes.
Good episode. Next up, we wanted to talk about Continuum for a second, because we said we're going to do a second Continuum podcast, but I don't see when that's going to happen if I'm not going to be here. So let's talk about Continuum. This week's episode was the virtual reality episode where you find out that the back, what do they call, Liberate, their big master plan is to control, to basically kill off some of the CEOs to get themselves into a bigger position of power, so when the whole CEO revolution happens, they'll be strong enough to fight them or whatever. So they basically mind wiped a couple of people to be assassins. And that's the episode starts off with people just walking up, shooting people, and then killing themselves. So I was like, all right, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. And really, the episode is about, what is her name?
Kira.
Kira, thank you. It's really about Kira trying to function without her brain implant thingy. What is it called? Her HUD?
Yeah.
So she has to go through the whole episode without her HUD, but then once the HUD comes back, then it's actually her doom. Because you're like counting down to when it goes back online, and it's not going to be good because they figured out a way to hack into it.
Yeah. But it was interesting to see how she felt, like, you could tell she was a little panicked there when she couldn't get Alec.
Right.
Because she relied on him so much up to now. And so she didn't have her suit. Because he's still working on it.
Right.
He's getting there. And suddenly she didn't have him. And so not only that, but she didn't have her head. It's like she was completely cut off. And you could see how she was like kind of slightly panicked about that, which I thought was kind of interesting because she's had all of this tech all her life.
Yeah, and she's had, and Alec has been her anchor since she got to this time.
Yeah, like her other eyes and ears, you know, like that whole connection that she has. So I liked the fact that this incident kind of isolated her. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting because up to now she's had that advantage. So that part of it I liked. And I liked how, you know, Alec kind of took initiative, you know, because he didn't have any information either. But he took an initiative, figured out he almost has her suit working, you know, and he was able to figure out that the guys were hacking into her at that point. And
unfortunately, what's scary is they figured out about him.
I know. I was thinking
that's
the same thing.
Not
they're, like,
good.
They're like, there's somebody out here who's as good. And they're like, do you think it's another one, you know, one of the police or the CP that came through? And I'm like, well, when you guys figure out who, and then they're like, well, there's only one other person we could think of because they can do the math too.
Right.
And they know exactly where Alec and, you know, the future goes.
Right.
So now it's like now Alec's on the table as well. So I thought that's going to
be scary because as smart as Alec is, he's locked up in a room with a computer. He's great,
exactly.
But
he's a kid, and yeah, he doesn't have any of that stuff. So that's going to play pretty well. So that was, I think, the key part, and also the fact that I loved how they do it. She's very subtle with that. The whole idea that, you know, she, you know, how do you explain away the fact that she's being controlled and trying to, you know, kill the CEO, and, you know, here Carlos is, and he's like, what the fuck, you know, what the hell's going on? And, you know, they were able to cover it up and say, well, it's this whole, like,
virtual reality
thing. Don't worry about that. So that saved him from discovering about her, obviously.
Well, because you had two other people who did the same thing.
Exactly. So it was set a precedent. But I love how in the end, it was just, you know, he's like, are you okay with this? And she just starts crying. And she's like, I'm really sorry. I don't remember any of that. And he's like, it's okay. You know, whatever. I'm like, I like how they just, again, she's so calm and methodical about stuff. But
she breaks down,
she just gets so human so quickly, and I love her character and the way they've designed her. So
because she's almost like a robot most of the time,
exactly.
But then when she loses it, she really loses.
And it's like they don't force it. It seems very honest. Like, right. Like that's where I would lose it too, you know. So I'm just the whole thing with like Alec now being kind of in their sights.
That scares me.
That's going to be really interesting.
The only thing is they can't kill him.
No. But how they're going to get to him, how that's going to expose him and what he does. Because right now, I'm laughing because in one of the scenes, you can see like in the background, there's like the light that comes through the slats in the window. I'm like, this guy's got all of this tech, all these TVs.
He's in a barn.
He's in a barn with like, I'm like in the, like during like the winter rains and the winds. I'm like, how is this stuff even protected? What's like, don't they have amazing like electric bills for this kid? Like,
Do they
not know what he's doing in the farm, in the barn? I was like,
well, the fact that he has a lock, he always
just
goes,
a little lock, you know? Yeah.
Well, no, he has a keypad lock, yeah. So it's a serious lock.
It's still.
But, yeah, they must have an idea. He's like, oh, he's got his computers back there. I guess he's gaming. They think that he's playing video games back
with
there.
With all of that, I'm like, looking at Elle going, the power bills must be insane.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
Anyway, but anyway, so I think it'll be, it could be fun to see where they go with that. So
thumbs up.
Yep, definitely.
Next up, let's talk about the premiere of Warehouse 13. Comments?
I was kind of disappointed because it's, I guess some people would call it a reset episode. Mm-hmm. They have to undo what happened in the season finale. So we don't really get anything new added to the party.
I call foul on the montage that they had at the beginning where they showed like like everybody was all sad. They just did this green screen montage. And I was like, what the heck are you guys doing right now?
Yeah.
You can't have that kind of video montage at the top of an episode before anything has happened.
The top of the season.
You're doing this goofy montage on green screen and you're trying to pull my heartstrings and it's not working because I think you're stupid right now. So I actually was just really kind of
annoyed.
I was really annoyed. Yeah. I was like, that's bad editing. Yeah. That's bad writing. That's just bad. And to be honest, it took me 2 tries to finish the episode.
Really?
Yeah. I admit, and I love the show up until I was really disappointed in the whole episode.
I just thought it was kind of eh.
It was really predictable, you know, where they were going with it. The whole thing, you know, again.
And what a waste of Brent Spiner.
I know, right? But
he's coming back, but still, for the introduction of the character.
But the whole idea of, and this is what kills me in a show like this, again, understanding they have to do it as the plot point, but first episode of the new season, and yes, of course, his, you know, what's his name, his character supposedly dies, you know, taking the knife for the whole thing.
Pete.
It's like, you know, why did anybody waste even, like, the pretense of a tear for that? It's like, you guys, in like 5 minutes, he's going
to
reset it.
About this,
fine.
He's going to be alive in about 10 seconds.
Exactly. So I'm like, really, you had, and the fact that they played it out for so long
it's
is
false
what told
stakes.
Me.
Yeah. It was,
and they played it, if they had just done it like, it had to happen and go, but they sucked it for all it was worth just so Artie could get his 5 minutes in the sun is like the drama.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
Melodrama.
My feelings about it is that, to me, it was kind of standard Warehouse 13. I enjoy the show, but I don't have really a high standard for it.
It didn't really fall
terribly much for me. Well, it was just kind of, you know, standard, you know, Warehouse 13 where I don't expect very much. And so if I don't expect very much, then if they don't give me very much, then it's like, okay.
And
this was that kind of situation.
I'm going to disagree with you on that because at the end, season 3 ended really strong.
Yeah.
Like
they did do, I will give you, you know, every once in a while they do something a little better than the usual. But this is like, that's what I said. This is pretty average.
No, this is not average. This is below average.
Especially for a season premiere.
Their average is
Their average
if
is
you're expecting to get new viewers, especially people who like Eureka and think, well, now that my show's done, let me see if I can adopt a new one. If I was coming to this show cold, I'd be out.
Right.
And the only thing that I thought was different, and I don't know how it's going to play out for the rest of the season. From what I understand, what they set up with Artie and Claudia, as you know, there's something terrible that Artie got going by resetting the world, and Claudia looks a little iffy and strange, and is clearly on the path of trying to bring. I forgot the name of the character back. The one who she was friends with last season.
Her best friend.
Yeah, the one who was briefly part of the team.
Right.
And
he's on Lost Girl.
I was trying to figure out where I reminded
him. Sorry, Sage says no. She seems on a mission to do that. So that's tied in together. But from what I understand, they're going to be doing this season a lot less one shot going after an artifact show and more of an arc thing with those two concepts.
Well, they've kind of been doing, they kind of started that last year.
That's why last year was so strong, because with it was all H.G. Wells, and it was fantastic.
Yeah. But this year they're going whole hog in that direction, much more arc, less standalone.
And that's fine. I like a good arc, and I like actually where the arc is going. I just thought the first episode was just out of the box. It's
really
not.
And still, for the introduction of Brent Spiner's character, I thought that was really subpar.
Yeah, I will give you that. There was nothing to that at all. It was like, Brent Spiner was in that, blink and you miss him.
The coolest thing I thought about the whole dang episode was the football. They finally got to catch it.
True.
I'm like, oh yay! It actually has a purpose.
That actually is true. That was pretty good, because they've had that football.
It's been a running joke for since day one, right?
Right.
And so finally, I'm like, the football, and it has a purpose. It does something. So
that was cool. Actually pretty good. I agree with that. All right,
it actually made sense. That's good.
Let's move on. Done with the. I don't like to bash for long, so let's move on. Next up is Alphas, and this was the season 2 premiere of Alphas, and they kind of reset stuff, except
not completely.
They basically let a whole lot of bad guys out, so
which seems to be, I guess, their season arc is going to be capturing
those
guys.
But what's of course hits home or close to home is that the doctor's daughter is actually part of she's running with the bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
And his get out of jail, how he got out of jail was she orchestrated that whole thing, partly to do what they wanted, but partly also to get her dad out of prison. Mm-hmm. So all that kind of played together. And I was, because he was talking about it. He was like, well, these guys are going to move, and when that happens, they'll have to let me out. And so she's like, all right, let's do something. So they let my dad out. I was like, okay. So all that kind of played together.
Thing is, at this point, I'm not sure how much was really for her dad and how much was for her boyfriend, the bad guy.
Right.
And I think that's going to play out through the season. You're going to see where her true loyalties lie.
I don't think, well, that's going to be interesting.
Because they are mutually exclusive. It's like, how much loyalty and affection does she still have for her father versus her attachment to this guy and his ideology?
I think she's starting to get closer, because they weren't close before, but now I feel like all that time that they spent with him, she visited him every week, they've actually gotten closer. So I think that's going to be a problem for her. That's all. I mean, and I agree with you.
Yeah, well, like I said, but I think that's going to be part of the season, and I like that. Is going to be finding out where she goes, how she figures into it.
And I have to say, this week I really miss Gary. Even though he was there, he wasn't there because he was disconnected.
Yes, exactly.
But I was like, oh, Gary, and you're not speaking. So he didn't speak for the whole episode.
Which is not good on Alphas.
Yeah, you need Gary. But then I like that then he came back to himself and everybody kept trying to hug him, and he doesn't like people touching him, so that was really funny. That was a good episode. I mean, I like them bringing everything back, and they've also said that things are now going to be different because they have a different agenda. They have a different group of people controlling them, and Dr. Rosen is like, all right, we're going to do this differently now. And all that stuff is good. It's only thing, okay, one negative that I don't like is the couple of the mind-controlling chick, I can't think of her name, and the guy that can shoot stuff. I can't think of his name. The two people I don't really care about. Their romance didn't work for me in season one, and now their breakup in season, their dramatic breakup for season two, I do not care. Like, I didn't care when they were together, and I don't care that they're apart and they're fighting. Like, they're, neither one of their characters are particularly interesting. I feel like they were hired because they're both pretty.
I agree.
That's the problem. It's the acting ability. I mean, you know, pretty but vapid.
Right. And I just, I didn't care.
Well, and their characters haven't really been given much in terms of depth either. So they're just these two attractive people who have abilities, who they were in a relationship and now they're sniping at each other, and I don't care. Let's move on to something interesting.
And speaking of which, we need to move on because I just looked at the clock. Mm-hmm. All right. Next up, let's talk about Rizzoli and Isles.
This was kind of for a lighthearted show, this was pretty bloody. I mean, when you're dealing with, you know, cutthroat, and literally you have this wedding scene at the top of the episode and the bride's bloody and dead.
Well, this was also the episode where you had Rizzoli's brother going up for detective, and then you had Frost. They were both going after the same chick, and she's a drug dealer.
And she's a drug dealer.
And basically, they both get negatives because the police chief is like, neither one of you ran a check on your potential girlfriend to figure out she was a drug dealer? F. Mm-hmm. So, the brother basically doesn't even get to do the exam for detectives because the police chief was like, you're too dumb to be a detective. And then the other guy, he's like, you're already a detective, I can't do anything to you. But basically,
you should know better.
Yeah, basically. And then he's mad at his sister because she didn't give him the heads up. But to be fair to her, she didn't know about it until too late, really.
And when she finds out, she's told specifically, do not give him a heads up.
Right. So it's just, yeah, that storyline, I thought that was actually kind of funny, watching them hit on the same girl. I thought that was amusing. But what was the case?
The brides.
What happened? I don't remember.
Trying to find out why, you know, who wanted her dead, and she's a Russian mail order bride, and yada blah blah, and the humanitarian's really a bad guy who's trafficking. And,
well, that one you should have known just mainly because the actor.
Of course.
I hate when they do that, when they cast
somebody who just looks like
Well, no, just not that. He's a big enough actor that I'm like, okay, we're gonna see him again. So he didn't just have that one scene. So that's always in crime dramas. I'm like, if you guys cast more no names, then these mysteries would be a little harder to solve. But
I didn't think he was a big name, was he?
I recognized him.
Okay.
So, I didn't say he was a big name. I just knew who he was. Anyway. So, thumbs up, Rizzoli and Isles.
I like the show.
Yay! Next up is White Collar, and this is the episode where they basically are finally back. They're back in New York. Got the anklet back on. Everything's supposed to be, you know,
well, except for Peter's in the penalty box.
Well, yes, except for that. So it's not entirely status quo. So the whole deal is that Neil wants to get Peter out and solve a case that'll help Peter, you know, get back on the good side or whatever. So that was all pretty good. I liked the episode. I liked that Peter couldn't not work on the case, even though he was told not to. He couldn't help himself. Mm-hmm. And that guy that was the head of the evidence room, like, wow. He's like, you are 2 minutes late. We'll be deducting that, and you'll be on reports. You are taking a personal phone call on your own time. And just like, he was just
although crazy. Technically it wasn't a personal phone call.
Yes.
It was work-related. It was just work he wasn't supposed to be doing.
Exactly, but he couldn't tell the guy that either. So that was all that was really good. I like, and the guy, well, because that guy is also from Person of Interest. I was like, oh, it's Nathan from Person of Interest. The guy that was in charge of the evidence
Brett Cullen is the actor's name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I like him. Though that was a weird, like,
and Lost.
But that's, it just seemed, didn't that seem like a very small role for him?
I have a feeling that he'll get a little bit more to do before we,
okay.
Your rule of, if you're going to cast a prominent actor, you better give him a little something to do.
Yeah, because I was like, that's really small. Like, he must be evil or something? I don't know what.
I thought it was funny that the criminal in this week's episode is the real Michael Weston, an actor named Michael Weston, who has actually been on Burn Notice.
That's funny.
As one of the people the fictional Michael Weston helps.
I'm sure that's probably why he was cast, because I was like, this is too awesome.
But he plays a good weasel.
He's a weasel?
He's kind of a weasel on this show.
I don't remember who you're talking about. Who was he playing?
The guy.
What guy?
He was the criminal that they were trying to catch. You know, in the health club, the racquetball thing.
Oh, that guy. Oh, I know who that guy is. Oh, right. Okay. Now I'm there. I'm with you. I'm sorry. I was just like, what? Like, this week, it's so weird. It's like I watched television this week, and then it all went out of my head, and I don't know why. But
there was a caper on white collar. Something happened. Neil was charming. Peter was agent.
But the and the wife, I like that she was participating and helping them solve the case. And
I like that Mozzie comes to Peter's rescue at the very end.
Yes, awesome. And organized all the phones. That was pretty good. So yeah, the whole episode just worked together. The whole team worked together. But he's still in the penalty box, right?
Yeah. I think we've seen Peter's boss more this season than almost the entire series.
Yeah, because he keeps getting in trouble, right?
Well, three episodes in a row, though, which is unusual.
All right, so...
it was a fun episode.
Yes.
Thumbs up. Oh, and more stuff about Neil's dad is... That's going to be the big arc thing of this year.
Right, because you find out that his dad was a cop, but that you think he's a crooked cop, but maybe he's not. Or you know he's still a cop, but the question is he crooked or not?
Mm-hmm.
And he was raised by his helped raise by his partner.
By his dad's partner.
Right. That's all pretty good. Yes. Thumbs up. White collar. Yay. All right. Next up, we're going to talk about Burn Notice.
Okay. Can we just say...
you guys should high five each other right now. Because you guys...
we told ya.
Totally called it last week.
Yes, you did. Yeah. Because when I was watching the episode, I was like, oh, yes. And the brother will be dying, and now.
Yeah.
It was so apparent in the clumsy execution of the episode.
Yeah.
It's like, Nate, darn it, you know.
I know.
Damn it.
Always in the way, Nate. Taking
stop
you
it.
To Nate.
Bad Nate. Bad Nate.
But, however, that said, at least they finally did something impressive. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, again, it's Nate. He's not like a full-time real character, but he was... he's enough in it so that it may...
well, because it impacts the relationship between Michael and his mom.
Exactly.
Because he basically took his little brother out and got him killed.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, though, I mean, Nate did, of course, exactly what he was told not to do. He says, do not approach him.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
But the thing is...
it's not going to matter to the mom.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
I mean, that was the payoff of the episode, is to see Madeline's reaction when Michael has to tell her that Nate's gone.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so that was worth it, just because we've been waiting for them to do something with some
significant,
gravitas.
Yeah.
Right.
Substantial.
And now, of course, Fee's going to feel guilty because
Nate
basically died to get her out of prison.
Yeah.
So
I think it's a good trade-off. and more important, Anton is dead.
Thank you.
Worst villain ever. In a long time.
But I like that big hole in the wood behind him.
Oh, my
God. I was like, that was
the
big old takeout.
What the heck did they shoot him
with? I know. It was like,
they wanted to make...
but it goes through Anson, Nate, and the wall.
And it's like
they wanted to make
sure...
whatever secret stays buried.
Yes.
They wanted to make sure he stayed dead.
So whether or not that's going to... you know, it should add some tension to some of the future episodes. But, you know, who's going to be the next big bad? What they're going to do with that? I don't know. So,
I thought it was really interesting, the structure of the episode, though, that you've got your four principals on three different missions. Because you've got Fiona in jail still.
Yep.
You've got Sam trying to protect Barry.
Oh, my God.
That was a storyline. I didn't even understand. I was like, why did we need an extra storyline?
I think they needed to have a reason to
Nate.
To not have Sam in the middle of the action and to have
Nate
instead.
Nate in there instead. They needed another person for it. And
right.
Oh, and so they wanted to make sure that Sam didn't die.
Yes.
Yeah, that would not have
been. And then you have Michael with Jesse and Nate.
Yeah, so...
and
Agent...
whatever
her name is.
The actress's name is Lauren Stimiel, formerly of Community.
There you go.
She's in Community?
She was... remember, she was the hot teacher that Jeff...
that Jeff had a fling with?
Had a fling with.
Yeah.
Season 2.
Yeah.
I have, like, no memory of that.
You knew
wow.
that, trust me.
Yeah. So it was
actually a pretty decent episode.
Pretty good.
It was, and I actually, I did tear up when he was telling the mom.
You
knew,
when
he was telling the mom, I was like,
because you know how her first thoughts, you know what's going through her head.
Oh, like, just the fact that she started
happened,
beating on him.
I know, here he is, like, crying over the body. I'm like, going through his head is, how do I tell mom? How am I going to explain this to mom?
Yes, I was like, that is not going to go well.
She's
not going to
be
speaking to him for probably the rest of the season.
It's going
to
be tough, so. Anyway.
Angst. Yay.
That was good.
Angst.
All right, next up, let's talk about Suits.
Suits.
Yay. I'm caught up. Yay.
And the whole, their arc this season is all about the lawsuit. Well, there's two arcs. There's the lawsuit.
Back.
Hartman coming back and trying to take over the company. So you're fighting that. And then you have the lawsuit where it's...
Harvey's being sued.
I was like,
the
I could
car company or whatever.
No, it's not the car company. It's Harvey's being sued
Harvey's
for
being
fraud.
Sued for, you know, for allegedly burying the memo, which he didn't bury, but Donna intentionally destroyed, thinking she was doing him a favor, and of course it causes more problems. Mm-hmm.
Yes, and Donna is now fired, and Harvey is not. Though the guy that they have replacing Donna is awesome in his ineptness.
Yes.
Like, he thinks he's one of those guys that's super energetic and thinks that he's doing a great job
and super
and bouncy and super perky. And
super
I was like,
efficient.
And Harvey is going to kill him.
Yeah.
Like, you will just find his corpse somewhere. And what was great was Mike was like, yeah, he's like, maybe we should take an early lunch.
Yeah.
Maybe we should look for another job.
The beeline with Lewis and.
Rachel. Yeah. Oh, them going to the that was actually pretty cool.
It was kind of neat. You're like, you could actually see how she could convincingly tell Mike that she was actually having fun working with Lewis, because up until
she was,
and it'd be like he was actually okay, you know, for that.
But of course, now he's going to realize how the how Harvey got the recording, because he gave it to her.
Yes.
So how did Harvey get it? And so now they're going to be enemies again, because Harvey can't, because Lewis can't stay friends with anybody for longer than one episode.
Yeah, but the thing is, Lewis was clearly in the wrong.
Yeah. But that's not how his brain works. His brain is going to be like, she betrayed me.
I can't trust anyone.
I think it's interesting keeping Lewis as a frenemy. I mean, I like the direction of season two in general, that he's a frenemy, neither friend nor enemy, but frenemy.
Kind of,
and so his allegiances are shifting. But the fact that after the whole big deal was made when Mike asked Harvey, what is this guy, you know, what did you do for him or what did he do for you?
You owe me the favor thing.
And at the end of the episode, Harvey tells Lewis,
You owe me.
I noticed that too. I'm like, well, now that explains that.
Why everybody owes Harvey.
Exactly.
He
collects favors.
He's entrusted with secrets that people do not want to get out.
So I thought that was a nice way to end the episode, that particular.
The thing with Jessica and the judge was interesting. It was kind of funny that.
Well, they reveal that she's kind of evil.
Jessica?
Well, a little bit.
Well, I wouldn't say evil.
Wants.
It's just that she wants what she wants.
Yeah,
and
she'll
she doesn't,
do anything to get it.
Which is, how is that different from Harvey?
I was like, I think that's still, okay, the difference between somebody who's playing a prank in college, you're like, oh, you can forgive a prank in college. But the fact that she deliberately got her drunk, got her naked, put her in front of the class.
With the professor.
With the professor who was doing this.
The selection.
She did it so that she'd get the slot.
Yep.
That's kind of an evil-ish thing to do.
Well, the fact that the judge knew the judge's goal was to make Jessica admit it, and it took, like, what, three times for Jessica to finally say, yeah, I did it, I'm not sorry, I'd do it again.
Yeah, and there's nothing you can do about it now, Judge.
The thing is, the show has kind of used Jessica as this ultimate arbiter of that which is right and good.
Not really.
No, well,
sort of, kind of...
It's always been what's right and good and
for the company.
For the firm.
Right and good for the firm, which is not the same thing as right and good.
True.
A couple other things.
But it's kind of interesting that we get to see that Jessica does operate from complete self-interest when appropriate.
Which is why it makes total sense why Harvey's with her. I mean,
they talk about the fact that she made Harvey who he is.
She mentored Harvey, and we get to see her.
What she was like.
What she is capable of.
Which is why I think it's interesting to see what that does or doesn't do to Mike, you know, over the
Because they're trying to make Mike into them.
Exactly. So, you know,
he is moving in that direction
but he's still trying to retain that humanity and humility part, so.
And every time he does, they tell him how weak he is.
Exactly, and how that's not going to get you anywhere, but it usually saves the day. So, it's USA, what are you going to do, but...
I don't know.
This show gets—it's one of the darker of the USA shows.
It does, yeah.
I like it a lot.
I do too.
It's my favorite.
It's pretty solid and consistent.
Yes,
which is good. Yeah.
That is one thing about it. I'd say of last season they had 13 episodes. They had maybe one bad episode in the entire season.
So Allison, just so you know, if you start watching it, the average is pretty high on this one. unlike Warehouse 13.
Yeah. Bear that in mind.
Yes.
I'm interested to find out how are they going to resolve the Donna dilemma.
They're going to bring her back some kind of way.
I don't think she's off the show. But
they showed her the preview for next week.
Right, but I'm just wondering how are they going to story-wise, because they kind of painted themselves in a corner.
I have confidence that they're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to do it, but I have
confidence.
They're
going to probably pull something back that we totally forgot about or something.
If they make the lawsuit go away, then the reason why she's fired can go away.
Exactly. So there'll be something they can probably pull into it.
That's the only thing I can think of. Other than that, she's screwed. But anyway, as I say, I think that is it for this week. If you have any feedback, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. And I'm actually, I was going to say I'm tweeting a lot, but I won't be for the next 2 weeks. And if you want to listen to us on getthepointradio.com. Krypton Radio, Wheatonopolis, and you can find us on iTunes. Don't forget to give us a grade. And we will talk to you guys in 3 weeks. Bye-bye.
Bye.